Welcome to this week's Degree of Interest with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Dr. Leonie Baldacchino. Now, you have quite an interesting job. It's a bit unusual for the university itself. So you're the director of the Dr. Edward de Bono Institute.
That's right.
Now, everybody sort of knows or knows of Dr. de Bono, God rest his soul. But how is he involved with the university? What's the institute all about?
Okay, so the institute was set up in collaboration with Edward de Bono in 1992, hence the name, the Edward de Bono Institute. It was originally set up in order to teach Edward's tools and techniques here at the University of Malta, so it was based mostly on the creative thinking side of things. However, over the years, we have diversified and expanded quite a lot, and we are now based on what we call our four pillars. So okay. The first pillar still relates very much to Edward's work. So we teach creative thinking, which, well, many people think can't be taught, but I can assure you it can. So we teach Edward's tools and techniques, including lateral thinking, the six thinking hats, and so on. But we also teach other methods for idea generation, as well as the theory underlying it.
Is that quite busy because of the startup sort of market that's here in Malta? Is that quite a busy course?
That actually links to another of our pillars.
Okay.
So the second pillar is innovation or innovation management, which technically refers to the implementation of creative ideas. So although creativity has a value in its own right, it makes our lives more interesting and, you know, more appealing and so on, especially in certain contexts, such as in organizations or in the startup scene, for example, ideas actually need to be implemented in order to derive any actual value.
Mm-hmm.
So we also teach our students how to manage innovation, how to implement the ideas that they have generated, at least the ones that are feasible enough, within different contexts. So again, we teach the practice side of things and also the theory. The third pillar is entrepreneurship, which we view from quite a broad lens. Uh-huh. So we do the startups side of things. We teach students how to recognize opportunities, how to assess the feasibility, how to start up and run a business. But we also look at entrepreneurship as a mindset. So even for students who are not so keen or are perhaps reluctant to start up their own business at this point in time, we still encourage them to start to think and behave like an entrepreneur, which in an organizational setting, if they are employed and act like entrepreneurs, we call that intrapreneurship, because we argue, and most employers would probably agree, that employees nowadays need to do a lot more than, you know, be told what to do and turn up for a 9-to-5 job.
And a company is the people.
Exactly.
So somebody has to come up with the ideas.
Exactly. So that's the third pillar. And the fourth pillar is perhaps the one that the general public would be least familiar with. We refer to as foresight or future studies, which has absolutely nothing to do with looking into crystal balls or palm reading, but it's all about a scientific approach to creating scenarios for the distant future, so trying to create desirable scenarios, what we would like the world to look like, and undesirable scenarios, what we don't want the world to look like, taking into account wildcards, for example, unexpected events that may take place, but then most importantly, creating the strategy in the present, using creative thinking techniques and innovation and entrepreneurship and all of that, in order to try to attain the desirable futures and to offset the undesirable ones. So it's a more proactive approach rather than just sitting around waiting for things to happen and hoping for the best.
And that would have been something that would have been very useful to have studied pre-pandemic. Because,
indeed,
you know, the impact of that, there was some, you know, amazing off-spins, and obviously there were some things that I'm sure nobody really saw coming.
Indeed, I think all of the four pillars, all of the four areas, are very useful pre and during and post-pandemic time, because we teach, for example, students to be flexible, to adapt to the changing environment, but also, as I'm saying, to be proactive. So if things aren't going according to plan, and many things haven't obviously gone according to plan in the past few years, having a creative and entrepreneurial mindset enables one to turn challenges, problems, into opportunities. So it's not just making the best out of whatever you have, but it's actually being more proactive, as I'm saying, and more creative to try to find the best solution, depending on what the issue is, of course.
And of course, if somebody joined one of the classes or courses and thought that their idea was going to be it, and you sort of start along and it doesn't quite make it, or what, you then have to convince them to stay, because if they've had that idea, potentially they have other ideas within them.
Okay. So that's a bit of a tricky situation, but we always teach our students not to fall in love with their ideas, because it's very easy to do so. So we try to encourage them, rather than convince them, we try to guide them to recognize what is going to be feasible, what is likely to be a good opportunity, and what is not. And obviously, in order to do so, we try to encourage them to be more objective, to really understand what the problem is, whether there is an actual opportunity. So, for example, in entrepreneurship, I like to use a very well-known tool, it's the business model canvas, in order to help students understand the resources that they would need in order to implement their idea, who they would need to work with, who their customers will be, what the beneath it all, what the value proposition is, what value are they offering to the client, to the customer, to whoever it is.
No, those tools are, even if you're just thrashing out an idea sometimes, just to realise, you know, you can't just ask your mum, would you buy this? You have to sort of ask complete strangers who don't know you and sort of don't care if you're successful or not, sort of thing. So what sorts of people do come on these classes, on these courses?
Okay, we have quite a range, actually. First of all, we offer courses at different levels. So our flagship program, so to speak, is a Master in Creativity and Innovation. It's offered both on a full-time and a part-time basis, but the part-time course is a day course. So students attend the same lectures, but rather than fitting them into a certain amount of time, they have twice the amount of time. And for a full-time student, the duration is 3 semesters, but the first 2 semesters, so 1 academic year, would be the taught component, adding up to 60 ECTS. And those students who successfully complete the taught component with a 65% average then get to move on to the dissertation, which is the third semester. For part-time students, they have twice as much the time.
Okay.
So for that, we attract students from a very wide variety of backgrounds, because it's what is called a conversion master's, meaning that we accept students with any undergraduate degree. So a degree is required, but it can be in any subject, any area. So it brings us many, many interesting backgrounds from also many different countries. So every year we have students from different countries.
Okay.
Which makes discussions extremely interesting. We also then offer a part-time evening diploma. The entry requirements for that are, one can apply as a mature student over the age of 23, I believe.
That's mature.
According adult learners, I think they're actually adult learners. I think they're actually called now. But the entry requirements aren't as aren't as tough. So we attract students without undergraduate degrees, and generally, they do tend to be students who perhaps haven't had the opportunity to study full time or to go to university when they were younger, and they would like to further their career prospects, or they're interested in becoming more creative, more entrepreneurial, and so on. And again, it's interesting because some students would be more interested in the creative thinking side and perhaps in the arts. Others would be more interested in business. But then when they get together in class and they start working together, they come up with all sorts of really interesting ideas, which is a learning experience even for us, even for the academics. So it's always really interesting. And we also offer a PhD program. So for that, you need a master's either in creativity and innovation or in a related area. So we also get students also from overseas. So, for example, at the moment, we have a student from Brazil, another student from Japan who recently submitted. Our other students are currently Maltese with a variety of courses. But if they don't have the Master in Creativity and Innovation, we generally recommend that they attend a few of our study units in order to top up the master's degree so that they are in line with the requirements.
Yeah, because there's always jargon to learn and sort of case studies that you need to be familiar with and
exactly.
Things like that.
And in addition to that, we also service the university by means of a number of undergraduate study units that are offered either as electives or as compulsory modules on different courses. So we teach, for example, BCom students, communications, education, engineering, architecture, you name it.
But there are lots of people who think they're not creative, but you've said you can teach creativity.
Absolutely. Actually, that's one of the first questions we like to ask our students. How many of you think you're creative? And we just have, you know, a few who very reluctantly raise their hands thinking that they're going to be told off for being obnoxious. Actually, we strongly believe that everybody is born with the potential to be creative. In fact, if we look at kids, we can see their the little C creativity, we call it. Right, so they can be creative in every day. Unfortunately, as kids grow older, for a variety of reasons, they tend to lose that creative flair. And we actually have data to support this. One of our most recent publications has just been published in the Journal for Creative Behavior. It was carried out by my two colleagues, Dr. Mari Brugolio from the Department of Economics and Dr. Margaret Manjon from the Edward de Bono Institute, together with myself, with the support of the Arts Council Malta. They had actually engaged us to assess the impact of their creative funding program. So they were funding these different arts-related projects in schools, and they wanted to see whether it's actually having an impact on the level of creativity of the kids who are participating. So we had quite a large sample. We had 400 students at the beginning of the academic year, and we tested them in around October, so before they started their, well, just at the beginning of the academic year, because the scholastic year, and then again at the end. And we had a test group, meaning students who were taking part in creative and students who were not. Those were the control group. Unfortunately, what we found was that, in general, from the beginning to the end of the academic year, there was a decline in students' creativity, which was, you know, rather upsetting as our first finding. Which kind of supported the fact that, you know, the schools kill creativity. But then when we looked further into it, we found that, first of all, great news for the Arts Council, the impact of creative was actually positive. So those kids who participated in creative either maintained or improved their creativity compared to the control group. Okay. But also then students who were taking part in artistic activities, extracurricular activities outside school, also performed better. And the test that we applied wasn't an arts-related test. It was what we call an alternative uses test, which means that we asked students to come up with different ideas, different uses for an everyday object. So this shows really clearly that participating in artistic activities, be it drama, arts, whatever it is, really does boost creative thinking. So anybody listening out there, please, please make sure that your kids don't miss out on the extracurriculars because of exams or studies or any other commitments.
It can be sometimes reading a book, going to the theatre, dancing around, singing, you know, just not being in front of a screen the whole time, I guess, is one of the key things.
Yes.
But also adults, sorry, because you do know it's sort of, you know, your confidence gets knocked, and as you grow up and then you go through jobs and then you have your families, I'm yes. guessing that might be some of the people who come to your evening classes.
Yes.
They haven't quite had the time, or they haven't got the confidence, even though they might have amazing ideas, amazing skills.
Absolutely.
And it's just having...
In fact, yeah, sorry, I got carried away talking about the paper, and I forgot your original question. And so, yes, you asked me if creativity can be taught, and absolutely it can. There are a number of very simple-to-use thinking tools, including the ones that I mentioned earlier by Edward de Bono. And, well, the first thing that one needs to do is to believe in oneself. Right?
And that's the tough one.
Yes, that is the tough one. But once they start to experiment, once they start to practice, because it's very much, it's practice and training. So just like one practices playing a musical instrument or dancing or sports or anything else, the more one practices, the better one becomes. And even with individuals who might have lost that intrinsic creative flair from childhood, for whatever reason, because of commitments, because of peer pressure or whatever else, once they start to practice again, and especially in class, we assign lots of group work, lots of group discussions, so they get to stimulate each other's ideas as well and build up on each other's ideas and build each other's confidence. We do find that by the end of the year, their level of creativity would have really been restored and improved.
Ah, fantastic.
Which is great.
Because that's it. You even sometimes, you know, you're in a meeting at work and you sort of don't want to raise your hand because you think, that's too obvious. That's way too obvious. And then someone else says it and gets really praised. You're like, why didn't I say that? And it's, again, a confidence thing that is really knocked out of us somehow through life itself. So yes. It's great to know that that can be restored somehow. So evening classes
for the part-time diploma. Mm-hmm. They're normally held on Tuesdays and Thursdays for 3 hours at a time. The course is offered every 2 years, but luckily it is going to be offered next October, so we're
Perfect.
Talking about it in a in a timely manner. Some of the lectures since COVID and Zoom are now being also held online.
Okay.
So we are back in class, but in line also with the rector's guidelines, part-time evening courses, some element of that can still be held online in order to further accommodate very busy people.
Because that's it. Sometimes you just can't leave the kids,
yes.
or you know.
Yes. Well, I'm definitely very happy to be back in class. But I also believe that COVID has been a learning experience for us, and we have found out that there are pros and cons to both in-person teaching and also online. So it's nice to be able to have a bit of a blend anyway, you know, trying to make the best of both worlds.
You would have had to put all you know into practice to be able to flip everything.
Indeed, yes, overnight.
Yes, because it was not at a timely point for
yes.
academic year. It was, you know.
It was sometime around March, I believe. Mm.
Yeah, yes.
But that's also another thing that we teach our students. So yes, we teach the theory, especially in the master's course and obviously in the PhD, we do teach theory because we believe that that is what underlies good practice. But we also get students to understand how that is applied in practice. So we, for example, organize, again, now happily post-COVID restrictions, we can go back to organizing off-site, off-campus visits to organizations, for example,
okay.
and for students to observe and practice what we would be talking about. We invite lots of guest speakers, not from only from Malta, but also from overseas. Some uh-huh. of them would be in person, some of them would be online.
And then, so people being able to put their ideas into practice in companies similar to theirs or completely alien to theirs, but with a fresh pair of eyes, perhaps the company benefits
yes.
from, you know.
So again, we also link some of our assignments to practical
okay.
tasks. In my case, I teach entrepreneurship. So I get students to work in small teams to come up with a business idea, for something innovative, ideally, mm-hmm. and to carry out a feasibility study. So that's one example. Another example is one of my colleagues, Professor Sandra Dingley, teaches a course on innovation management on the Masters. So she asks students to select an organization and to carry out an innovation audit.
Okay, see how innovative they are? And,
yes,
okay.
to assess their current level of innovation, mm-hmm. but also their potential for further innovation. And then obviously a report is drawn up and the companies that are interested get a copy of the report, including recommendations. Another of my colleagues organizes what she calls the mystery client for her marketing, innovation in marketing assignment, where every year she selects a different organization. She brings in one of the leaders of the organization. They speak about any challenges they might be having in relation to marketing, advertising their products, and students get to write up an innovative marketing plan and present it to the organization.
That's great fun.
So, yes, we try to organize this as kind of a win-win situation, something that's useful for the students to be doing, but something that the organizations can gain something from as well. So any organizations out there who would like to be involved in any of this, please feel free to give us a call, drop us an email, and we'd be very happy to discuss collaboration.
Sounds like a really good opportunity for them, actually, and also for people to have their ideas validated and know that this isn't just an academic mark, this is actually something that would work in real world.
Yeah.
So some of the ideas that have come out of it, have there been things that have been commercialised from coursework, or is it like it can't be commercialised, it's just part of the coursework that you do, or individual ideas? Have there been some really fun ones or some ones that we might know about that have actually taken off and we're using every day?
There have been some examples of students who went off and started up their own businesses or their own projects. There have also been some examples of the companies who took on our recommendations, our students' recommendations in this case. So, yes, there have been some examples of that.
That's really, I think it's really interesting. In fact, next week we're talking to the guys of the KTO about protecting ideas and things like that. So there's like a chain of events, isn't there, here at the University of Malta. What are the things you see coming big trends now post-pandemic? We're coming out of everything. Hopefully after the summer we won't even remember what it was. Move forward. Are there other different creative ways businesses should be looking at business, or is it more just a case of a bit more online? Or
no, there's definitely more happening online. As I said before, people have understood that there are opportunities in online collaboration, online teaching that were perhaps not available before, but people weren't so aware of them before. It could be a little bit dangerous for people to get too comfortable being online.
Yeah, I don't.
So this is why I said there are, pros and cons to both, and I think it needs to be a blend. But this is important also for us, not just in our teaching, but also in our presentation of research, for example. As we're an academic institute, so we're very active on the research front, and every year we participate in a number of international academic conferences.
Okay.
Since some of these have now been started being offered online or in hybrid mode, obviously this offers more opportunities because, if we're not in a position to travel so often during the year because of commitments we have here or because of financial restrictions or whatever it is, we can still at least participate. And, so for example, last summer we presented at the European Academy of Management, at the Southern Oregon University Creativity Conference, at the Marconi Institute of Creativity Conference.
Cool.
And yes, these are all quite high profile. And as a result, we are now involved in the recently set up Possibility Studies Network.
Okay.
Which is an international collaboration around possibility studies, which is something quite new, but again, it's quite related to entrepreneurship.
It'd be great to be a doctor of possibilities, wouldn't it? It's such a great title.
We're also, again, as a result of these new online collaborations, members of the International Society for the Study of Creativity and Innovation, which brings together literally all the biggest names in the world in the study of creativity and innovation. So, these have all come about as a result of the possibility of online collaboration, which wasn't so big in the past.
So, and what's coming up for you now? So we're sort of mid-May-ish. What's happening until the end of the year for you?
Okay, so students are at the moment in their second or fourth semester for the master's, right? They're working towards their end-of-year assessments and exams. Most of our assessments are actually presentations, assignments, coursework, and so on.
Okay.
We have just a small number of examinations, nobody likes exams. And in all fairness, I don't believe that creativity and entrepreneurship and that sort of thing is best assessed via examinations, which is why we have so much focus on group work, assignments, presentations, and so on. But universities dictates that a few exams have to be held as well. Our master's students are also working on their dissertation proposals at the moment. So in the next couple of weeks, we'll be having a look at what ideas students came up with to work on their thesis.
Okay.
And again, we get a very wide variety over there. They all have to be related to at least one of the four pillars that I mentioned before, but then they can apply to whatever background that they like.
Okay.
So if a student is coming from the education sector, for example, they can carry out a dissertation on entrepreneurship education or on creativity in schools.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, I see.
That sort of thing.
They have to be creative with it.
Absolutely.
Indeed. And any other big international events before the end of the year that people can look up?
Okay, again, yes, with the international events, we're quite active. So in November each year, we coordinate Global Entrepreneurship Week here in Malta. This takes place in around 180 countries.
Wow.
And we coordinate a program of events in collaboration with a number of partners. We haven't got the program for that yet, but it will be up in around September or October. We've just completed World Creativity and Innovation Week. As part of the Global Entrepreneurship Week initiative, I was in Riyadh with another colleague and one of our students for the Global Entrepreneurship Congress, where we got to meet Steve Wozniak,
Wow!
Yes, Apple fame and Mark Randolph, who's the co-founder of Netflix, which was really cool. We'll be celebrating Professor Edward Obono's life. Sadly, I'm sure many of our listeners know that he sadly passed away in June last year. And on the 20th of May, we'll be organizing an online memorial lecture. This will be delivered mainly by Tim Schweizer from Luther College. Tim was a close friend of Edward's, but he was also a visiting professor here at the Institute for a number of years. So he knows both the Institute and Edward's work and Edward personally. So we look forward to that discussion.
Sounds like a really packed agenda. I'd really like to thank you for coming on. This is Dr. Leonie Baldacchino from the Edward Obono Institute. And I'm just going to finish off with one of my favorite quotes ever, which is, one day or day one, you decide, you know, and it's like, if people want to get creative, if they want to start a new business,
absolutely,
they need to be getting in touch, because you start your courses in October.
Yes. If anybody would like any more information, they can contact us, instituteofthinking@um.edu.mt, or find us on Facebook. We're pretty active there.
Fantastic. Thank you again. Thank you.